Welcome to the Amazing with Grace podcast, a spiritually relevant space for people like you who want to be excellent but not perfect. I am your host, Dr. Q Perry, a board-certified and Christian psychologist based in Dallas, Texas. Although I want this show to be a helpful and inspirational resource for you, it is not meant to substitute for a relationship or treatment with a licensed mental health provider. For more information and additional resources, please visit our website at www.amazingwithgrace.com. Let's get into the show. Hello and happy holidays to you. Thank you so much for joining us again today. If this is your first time, welcome to the show. And if it is not your first time, welcome back. As we approach the holidays, I wanted to offer us some encouragement for those who are handling grief. Grief is already something that is difficult to bear, but I know that it can be especially challenging as we go through the holiday seasons, and even more so because of what we're facing this year. There's a lot of stress due to COVID, obviously, and then the political climate, the racial climate has added to that usual level of distress. So for those of you who missed my free talk last week on managing grief in the holiday season, don't worry because I will be covering the exact same information. So first I'll start off with talking about grief in general, and then I will give us some more specific tips on how to handle grief in the holiday season. Before we jump in, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, and then also share this with two people who might also be dealing with grief during this time. All right, let's first start out by talking about some myths about grief. Now, what is a myth? A myth is a widely held belief that when we uncover it, it's actually false. One of the most common grief myths that I encounter all the time is that you should be strong for everyone else. I know that in our efforts to care for our family, to care for our friends, we sometimes lose sight of ourselves, and sometimes that belief can become so ingrained that you think that it's actually wrong for you to have emotions, that it's actually not okay for you to have your own emotional reaction. And so I definitely wanted to address this one as a myth, because it's not that you should be strong for everyone else, so much so that you are not on your list. And so I encourage you to give yourself permission to grieve. Another myth that I encounter often is if the relationship was positive, you should not be sad. And I think the intention behind this myth is positive and well-meaning. I think people are trying to encourage the person who has lost someone to reflect on those positive memories. But I think what's missing is just that, is that because the relationship was positive, that might actually bring up some feelings of sadness. I know for me, losing my mom back in 2018 was a really, really, really big deal. My mom was my absolute best friend, and so reflecting on all the wonderful and beautiful memories we've had together is actually something that makes me sad from time to time when I reflect on those things. So I want to encourage you not to have to pick either or. Like, if the relationship was positive, that you should not experience any sadness, or even if, unfortunately, the person who passed away did not have a close relationship or peaceful relationship with you, that you shouldn't also be sad. And so I definitely want to dispel that grief myth. Another grief myth is that once you're done grieving, life will return to normal. We all know that there is no, quote, normal as it relates to life anyway, and especially as it relates to processing through grief. There is no normal, so there is not a goal of learning to get over it. You learn to work through it. Now, this next one, I want to spend a little time here because this is one that I think caused people to get stuck, and that is the myth that the first year is the worst. For some people, this may absolutely be true. So I definitely do not want to negate that fact if that is true for you, but it's not true for all people. So I'm thinking about those situations in which maybe during the first year, you're having to manage cleaning out your loved one's belongings. You're trying to file a bunch of paperwork for insurance benefits and disability benefits that need to be terminated and all kinds of things, and dealing with attorneys potentially and trying to close out this person's estate. There's a lot of maybe administrative and business things that have to be taken care of in that first year after someone passes away. And sometimes that process can last even longer than a year. And my experience has been, yes, there might be times within that first year where the emotions are really strong and intense. But sometimes, because your mind might be focused on maybe the business aspect of things, or if there were kids involved, maybe getting them a sense of stability and trying to manage their emotions, a lot of times when your focus is on that, it's not solely present to where it allows you the space to grieve and really feel and process the things that you would normally be able to process. And so I'm saying all that to say the first year may not be the worst. And so I don't want you to feel surprised if it's year two or three and it still hurts just the same as if it happened yesterday. Okay. Another grief myth is that only someone who has suffered the same loss can understand. Now, I know that this one comes up quite often because we get really protective of our pain, right? So sometimes, say, for example, if a person has lost a child, they may say, well, why would I want to talk to this person about it? He's never lost a child. She's never lost a child. She has all of her children. There's no way that she can understand. People might say things like, well, she's never lost a husband, so why would I talk to her about it when she's not even married? So she couldn't possibly understand the depth of my pain. And so the reality is that no one will fully understand your pain, because your pain is yours. Your grief experience is yours. It's unique to you. And so the reason why I want to challenge this mindset is because it can keep us isolated, and it can keep us from getting the support from people who very well may want to support us. No, they may not be able to fully understand, but at least they are willing to try to understand your experience. So I want you to challenge yourself that if this is something that you think or have thought, I want you to challenge yourself to have some flexibility and be more open to allowing others who may not have experienced either loss at all or even the type of loss that you've had to be able to bond and support one another. And then this last one that I'll talk about is that grief and mourning are the same. I know that they're typically used interchangeably, but they are not actually the same. So I want you to think of grief as more of the inner process, okay? Grief are the things that you talk about to yourself, your feelings that you have inside, right? So these are your thoughts and feelings inwardly. Mourning is more of the external expression of those thoughts and feelings. So how do you show your grief? Okay, so think of grief as internal and think of mourning as external. Now, before we transition into the stages of grief, I want you to spend some time thinking about those myths. Those are definitely not all the myths that I've heard before, but those are definitely some of the main ones. And if there are other ones that you notice might keep you stuck, I want you to make note of it and see if you can find some research on the internet or talk to a loved one or talk to your counselor about some of the thoughts that you have that might be keeping you stuck in your grief process. Okay. Now, if any of you have ever done any reading on grief, even just briefly, you'll quickly find lots of information about the stages of grief. And usually it's titled The Five Stages of Grief. And these were developed by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And those five stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Now, what a lot of people don't know is that these stages were actually stages of what the dying person experiences, right? But most of us look at these stages as something that the bereaved experience. So it doesn't mean that we don't experience these things, but I definitely wanted to clarify where these stages of grief originated from, and also to show that the research shows that we don't actually experience these things in stages. Okay, so it's not like you start at denial and then you have to go through anger before you can get through bargaining and get on to addressing the depression. Some people may never experience all of these. Some people may experience all of these. And don't be surprised if you experience one and then some time later you find yourself experiencing the same thing again. Okay, so let's talk about what they are in detail. Denial. This is where you just cannot believe that this is happening to you. Okay, if your loved one has passed away, you might be wondering to yourself, is this real? Is this a dream? I cannot believe that this is happening to me, or I cannot believe that this has happened to me. And you can start to question God, you can start to question your spirituality when you are in this denial phase. It's almost like your body and your mind are just in shock. You just cannot believe it. Okay. Then the anger stage is where you might have a lot of resentment and anger towards yourself. You might have some anger towards other people. You might have anger towards God, and you might even have some anger towards your deceased loved one. Okay, so it's really important, if you found yourself feeling angry since your loved one has passed away, stop and check in with yourself and ask, like, who am I angry at? Am I angry at myself? Am I angry at my loved one who's passed away? Am I angry with the doctors? Am I angry with God? Because answering these questions will help you to start to process things a little bit deeper and be able to ask yourself some specific questions regarding who that anger is towards. Okay. Moving on to the bargaining stage. This stage is where I see a lot of people get stuck, because their minds get into this rumination of asking yourself a lot of what if questions. What if I could have gotten to the hospital sooner? What if I would have made that phone call? What if I could have encouraged them to stop the treatment? What if I could have encouraged them to just try that new medication? Maybe if I had ask them to get a second, third, or fourth opinion, this would not have happened. Okay. The reason why we can get stuck here is because what we don't realize is that in our minds, we're hanging the outcome on the what if. So what if I had just gotten to the hospital 5 minutes sooner? Then this would not have happened. We're blaming ourselves, or sometimes we're blaming other people. And so I think it's hard for people to move beyond the what ifs, because they often get stuck and they don't play out the outcome, right? So what if I had called them? What if I had encouraged them? They're not really looking at all the other factors that played into the unfortunate passing of your loved one. Then this next one is depression. This is the sadness, the loss that we feel, the emptiness that can come along with losing someone. And we'll talk about it a little bit more later. But this is not the same as a clinical depression. Okay, I know that the stage says depression, but it's not a clinical depression. Think of this stage as more of the typical sadness that comes along with losing a loved one. Okay. Then there is the stage of acceptance. And acceptance doesn't mean that you're okay with the fact that your loved one is gone or that you like it. This is more about acknowledging the fact that this has really happened and that I will now have to make some adjustments to my life because my loved one is gone. Okay. Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross also worked with David Kessler. He is a world famous grief expert, and he recently requested permission to add a sixth stage of grief, which I think is brilliant. And that sixth stage is finding meaning. And this is where we are able to process through all of those stages, or process through the stages that you have experienced or are experiencing, and figure out, how can I make sense of this? How can I use what I've learned? How can I use the experience that I've had with my loved one and try to find some meaning? How can I make my life as meaningful as I can despite my loss? Okay. Now, again, the denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, finding meaning, those are not the only experiences that we have, or stages, if you will. Okay. There are some other grief experiences. What about anxiety? Have you ever noticed that since your loved one has passed that you felt anxious, you're afraid, you're fearful, you're not sure what's going to happen? You start worrying, right? You might be wondering, well, what's going on with my health? Or what does this particular symptom mean? You might get overly cautious about different things, about taking medications. You might get overly worried about doctors. Might get overly concerned about getting a diagnosis. So sometimes you might be concerned about your own health or the health of other family members. Okay. Sometimes people experience guilt. I know that this is a common feeling that people have. Sometimes it's survivor's guilt, where you think, I just cannot believe that this person of all people passed away. This was the most loving person. He was the kindest person. She was the most forgiving person. It's really unfortunate that this person passed away, when maybe someone else, or even including ourselves, we may think, I deserve to get the sickness and die, or somebody else, anybody else but this person. Okay. Sometimes guilt can be another grief experience. Sometimes people feel embarrassed about talking about the relief they feel. Usually you'll hear things like, oh, I'm just glad so-and-so is not in pain anymore. I'm just glad that so-and-so doesn't have to go to all those doctor's appointments or endure all the pain and things like that. But sometimes people also, especially those who have had to be involved with caring for this person, or maybe have put their lives on hold to help manage some aspect of this person's life or illness, sometimes there is a relief. So yes, I'm sad that I have lost this person, but there's also part of me that's feeling relieved that I can start to rebuild my life again, or to get a life if I feel like I didn't have a life beforehand. Some other common emotional experiences include numbness and feeling confused overall. Okay, so again, all of those emotional experiences that I've talked about, that's not an exhaustive list, but those are some common grief experiences that people, including you, might be experiencing. So I wanted to point those out, because a lot of times, again, when we are experiencing grief, it can feel very isolating, okay? Because everybody's journey is different. And so because somebody else doesn't experience the same emotions that you experience, it can feel really confusing at times, and you can wonder if, quote, you're grieving the right way. And so there is no right way to grieve. The right way to grieve is your way, as long as it's not causing you to not participate in your life and to not engage in your life. Okay. Now let me talk about some factors that can affect grief. Okay, because these are some things that can impact how grief shows up for you. Okay, and it can explain why you might feel a certain way, or why you may not feel a certain way. These factors can also explain why you had one particular reaction to death, but then when somebody else passed, you didn't have the same reaction to death. Okay, so as I go through these, I want you to keep these in mind to try to help make sense of your own grief process. One factor that affects how grief shows up for you is psychological factors. Okay, this is how you made sense of the loss. What did you think about death and dying before your loved one passed away? Did you think that bad things don't happen to good people. What was your own emotional state when your loved one passed away? What was your level of emotional attachment to the deceased? Okay, so you can think about your answer to all of those questions and see how those things in particular can impact how you experience grief. Other factors include the characteristics of the bereaved, okay, which is you. Characteristics of the bereaved. This is your personality. So, right, what's your natural personality style like? What's your natural temperament? What coping skills did you already have, right? If I was a person who already had pretty decent coping skills, that's going to affect me a little bit different than if I was already struggling emotionally and the coping skills that I had, they were not working, okay? Some other characteristics of you personally include your previous experience with death, right? So is this the first major loss that you've had in your life ever? Is it the first major loss that you've had in your life in a long time? What other emotional stressors do you have going on? What is your emotional and spiritual maturity like? Okay, these are all factors that can impact how grief affects you and how it shows up in your life. Other factors that can affect grief include characteristics of the death itself. So what was the cause of your loved one's death, right? Was it something sudden? Was it something that was preventable? And I know for those who have lost loved ones due to COVID, there are so many unanswered questions that you may not even have all the information to be able to answer this part of the questions, but just some things to think about, okay? So again, was it something sudden? Was it something that was preventable? What has been the time since your loved one passed away, right? Did your loved one just pass away recently? Has it been a few months? Has it been a few weeks? Has it been a year, 2 years? Has it been more than 2 years? What was your level of involvement with the deceased, right? Were you their caretaker? Were you seeing them or talking to them on a daily basis? That's going to be something very different than if you were somebody who maybe did not have that day-to-day interaction, okay? I'm not saying that it's guaranteed, but it could make a significant difference for you. Were you actually someone who were involved in making the decision to remove life support, okay? That's a very huge decision, and that's going to make a difference in the questions that you have and the thoughts that you have had since your loved one has passed away. Other factors include physiological factors, and this is, what is your own physical health like? Are you in pretty good physical health? Have you let your health decline because you were worried or concerned or taking care of someone else? Are you eating properly? Are you taking care of your mental health? Are you abusing substances? Are you taking your medications properly? Are you overusing your medications? So think about your physical health, okay? When we're not in good physical and mental health, that's also going to impact a huge stressor like grief and how it shows up in our lives. And then the last factor is something that it says it's secondary, but I definitely do think that it does not mean that it's not of equal importance, okay? And this is where you might have actually lost a specific role in your life. So let's say if I was married and I lost my husband, then I've lost that role as a wife. And so that is something that I have to grieve as well. Right? If I've lost a child, then I've lost my role as either a mother altogether, or I've lost my role as a mother to this particular child. Okay, so think about what you've lost in terms of a piece of your identity. And then sometimes it's something physical. Let's say maybe in this example, I've lost my husband and I can no longer afford my home. And so maybe now me and my children have to move somewhere else. Not only did I lose my husband, and I've also lost the home that I wanted to have as our family home to finish raising our children. But maybe I've lost that. Okay. So are there other possessions that I've lost because of this person's death? Okay. So even though they're considered to be secondary factors, I definitely do think that these are some equally important pieces to consider as you process your grief. Now, before I go into some specific tips for handling grief in the holiday season, I wanted to just go over a few grief Bill of Rights. Okay, this was a Bill of Rights created by Alan Wolfelt, but it has been adapted by myself. Okay, so what that means is that I did not create these all specifically, but I have taken them and adapted them for the sake of this podcast episode. Okay, this first one is, you have the right to experience your own unique grief. I really like this one because I think we can get into unnecessary conflict with ourselves and unnecessary conflict with other people if our grief journey looks different than what other people expect of us, or looks different than what we expect of ourselves. So I want you to give yourself permission and say to yourself, I have the right to experience my own unique grief. Number two, I have the right to set boundaries with toxic people. Not everybody will be sensitive to your grief. Not everybody will be compassionate as it relates to your grief. Okay, so you might experience some people who they are operating with business as usual. Okay, most people in society, I think our culture tends to be more gentle, caring, understanding, and patient when someone has lost a loved one, but that's not everybody. And so I want you to give yourself permission to set boundaries with toxic people. So that means I can mute people on social media, I can unfollow people, I can block people, I can put people in a virtual timeout, I can put people in an actual timeout where I choose not to respond to people if I know that what they're saying to me is not helpful. Okay, give yourself that permission. Number three, you have the right to feel a multitude of emotions. Okay, we know that it's understandable to feel sad when it comes to losing a loved one. But as you can recall, there are lots of different emotions beyond feeling sad about a loss. So give yourself space to feel all the emotions and not try to stuff certain ones down or deny certain ones or minimize certain ones. Give yourself the space to feel all of them. Number four, you have the right to embrace your spirituality. Now, this one could be a little bit controversial because many times people have very well-meaning cliches about God and why your loved one has passed away. But when I say that you have the right to embrace your spirituality, it also includes going to God and giving God your pieces. Okay, God, I am broken. God, I am confused. I am even angry with you because I truly do think that if you wanted this to be different, you would have changed it. I know that you could have had a different outcome and you didn't. So I'm upset. Give God all of your pieces, not just the part that we think that we're supposed to give him. Give him those parts of us that are uncomfortable, that we might think are ugly, that we might think are unacceptable to him. Even those pieces that are not acceptable to us. Give all of that over to God and allow him to minister to you through his word, minister to you through song, minister to you through a phone call or a caring text from somebody. Okay. Number five, this one has been probably my personal favorite in my own grief journey, and that is, you have the right to refuse or reject unwanted help. People, they mean well, they're very kind, but sometimes their help is not helpful. Okay. And so I've had to set some boundaries and encourage others to set boundaries around unwanted help. Sometimes what someone else thinks is helpful to you may not be helpful to you. And it is okay to say that. it's okay to say that that was their idea of healing when they were going through their own grief journey, okay? And that's not something that I choose to do, and that is okay. Number six, you have the right to have your grief journey be respected by others. So I think that goes back to number five, okay? And number one, I have the right to experience my own unique grief. And so what that means is the way that I process my grief is going to look very different than the way even a sibling experiences and expresses their grief. It's going to look very different than maybe a cousin, other family members. So let's make sure that we don't get caught up into thinking that because we all lost a family member, that all of our grief process should look the same. Okay. Give yourself the space to have your own unique grief and not feel like you have to explain or over-explain your grief journey in order for it to be respected by other people. Now, notice I didn't say that other people have to accept it or even understand it, but they do have to respect it. All right. And this last Bill of Rights for you is that you have the right to not agree with cliches about grief. So you might hear some common ones like God doesn't make mistakes, God took who he wanted, God needed her or needed him more than we did, and just pray about it. While all of those things might be comforting to some people, they may not be comforting to you. They may not be comforting to you at all, or they may not be comforting to you in that moment. Okay, so if you find yourself not agreeing with some of those cliches, that is okay. It does not mean that you are not spiritual enough or that you don't have enough faith or that you're not emotionally mature enough to agree with those things. Give yourself space also to not agree with those things either at all or right now. Okay, so let me stop and check in with you. How are you feeling as I've gone through lots of information about some stages of grief, some emotions that you might experience as you're going through your grief journey, some factors that can impact how grief shows up for you, and giving you this Bill of Rights for grief? How are you feeling? Maybe put one or two words in your phone or jot down some notes, checking in with yourself. How am I feeling? If you don't feel very confident in being able to identify an exact word or feeling, emotion, maybe describe it as a number where 10 is the worst I've ever felt and 1 is the best I've ever felt. Where would you rate yourself? Okay, you can use that simple tool to check in with yourself throughout the day, or you can do it first thing in the morning, or do it right before you go to bed. Checking in with yourself. How would I describe my mood, or how would I rate my mood for today? Now, let's get into some specifics on how do we handle grief in the holiday season. I have received a number of questions about how is this supposed to look, right? It's already difficult. The holiday season is difficult when everybody else is happy or you feel that you are supposed to be happy even though you're grieving. But it's especially challenging for us right now given our times. These are unprecedented times, and so there's lots of unknowns. So I want to encourage you not to go on autopilot. I want you to slow down and check in with yourself. That is my very first tip. I want you to slow down and check in with yourself. So that what we just did, when I asked you, how are you feeling? How do I rate my mood? That's an example of checking in with yourself. Ask yourself, what do I need right now? During the holidays, we can get caught up into kind of society's schedule of expectations for us, and we can also get caught up in what our family and friends want and expect from us, that we immediately say yes to things. And when we do that, we neglect ourselves and we forget our own boundaries. And then we notice that we later feel resentment and regret because of the things that we've automatically said yes to or automatically said no to. Okay, so start by checking in with yourself. This next one is to be mindful of triggers. Now, there's going to be songs that remind you of your loved one, certain movies, certain stories that people share, looking at photo albums, whether they are actual photo albums or looking at memories on Facebook or other social media outlets. Okay, being mindful of your triggers. But in addition to being mindful of your triggers, I also want you to be prepared for unexpected triggers and unexpected emotions, right? So you might automatically know that, oh, when I watch this particular movie, that these emotions will come up because it will remind me of my loved one, okay? But there will be times when you might have unexpected triggers. You may expect to be okay, but there might be certain things that unexpectedly make you cry, unexpectedly make you irritable, make you upset, okay? So be on the lookout for those unexpected triggers. I also encourage you to do something that I practice myself in my grief journey, and that is to practice self-compassion. Many times we have our emotions, right? So those are natural. But then our suffering comes because we are judging those feelings. We're judging those thoughts. So I encourage you to avoid judging yourself and practice kindness. The same kindness, the same compassion, the same empathy, care, love, and concern that you offer to other people. I want you to offer that to yourself. Asking yourself, what do you expect from yourself? Asking yourself, are my expectations of myself unrealistic right now? Another tip to manage your grief in the holiday season is to delegate. Okay, are there ways that you can delegate things and keep it simple? So maybe you normally do all of the cooking. Maybe you are accustomed to making everything from scratch. Is that something that's realistic for you to do in this season? Is it better for you to maybe buy a ham or a turkey and then make the sides? Is it better for you to ask other people and we just make it a very small potluck? Is it better if we just ask other people to bring their own meals and we just have our meals together? Is it better for you to cater your meals? Okay, so I want you to be thinking about those things that you normally always do. And I have these in air quotes. You can't see me. But try to find ways that you can delegate some tasks. Do you typically do all the decorating? Do you do all of the shopping? Are there other people that you can assign some tasks to? Here's another one. Don't get caught in earning grief points. And you might be thinking, Dr. Perry, what in the world is a grief point? Well, what I've noticed is that many times people can make their grief into a competition. Right? So the goal is to get more sympathy, get more empathy, get more understanding from other people, get more pity, whatever the motivation might be. Sometimes we can get caught in that. So if I think that me losing my brother is worse because it was my brother versus he was just your friend, then I'm somehow invalidating your grief. You should not feel as much grief. You should not get as much grief as I did because it was my brother. Or let's say we both lost a friend. Well, you've just known him for a couple of months, right? That's nothing in comparison to the 5 years that I've known him, okay? Don't get caught in trying to earn grief points for yourself or other people who are trying to get grief points for themselves. Don't even get caught into those kinds of discussions. And another tip is to not try to control other people. Okay? Don't try to control other people. The same way that you have your own grief journey, other people have their own grief journey as well. And the reason why I thought this was really important to share is because if we're not mindful of this, We can have an emotional reaction if we see people interacting in ways that we think they should not be. So, for example, if I'm feeling sad on Christmas because I'm missing my mom, for example, and I see the rest of my family having a good time, watching movies, listening to music, I can make the assumption they don't care about my mom. They don't miss her. They didn't love her as much as they say they did because look how they're acting. Okay, so we have to be very careful about judging other people's grief and their grief journey. And the same way that we want other people to respect our unique journey, we have to also be respectful of other people's grief journey. Other tips include being careful to avoid overindulgence. Now, I know this one is tricky. I was a little bit hesitant about putting this as a tip, but I think the psychologist in me could not help but to remind us, including myself, right? So we all typically engage in overindulgence during the holiday time. We love consuming our favorite foods, and we typically eat more than what we normally would, but we want to be careful about emotional eating. You'll notice the difference when you start to feel bad about yourself afterwards, where you'd rather spend more time eating than with other people, or you're denying other people's requests to spend time with you. You'd rather eat than spend time with other people. You'd rather eat than verbally express yourself. You notice that food is the only thing that seems to make you happy. So we have to stop and check in and ask ourselves, am I truly hungry? Or am I truly eating because I'm fellowshipping and enjoying other people being around? Or am I eating to change my feelings? The same thing goes for drinking. Okay, so I want us to be careful to avoid overindulgence. Other things that you can do to manage your grief in the holiday season is to ask yourself about your traditions. Are there certain traditions that you want to keep to honor your loved one? Are there things that you want to change? Is there a special way that you want to remember your loved one? This could be a memory box. This could be a balloon release. This could be visiting the gravesite. This could be setting a special place for your loved one at the dinner table. It could be preparing your loved one's favorite meal, favorite dish, favorite drink. Okay. So figure out those traditions that you want to keep, which ones you want to change, and finding special ways to honor your loved one. And the last two I'll say is don't forget about the kids and teens, okay? A lot of times kids and teens, because they don't express themselves, they don't know how to express themselves the way that we do, for the most part, many times their feelings are omitted, okay? So I want to encourage you, if we are changing traditions. For example, if we normally go to uncle's house for Thanksgiving and we've decided that we're not doing that this year, let the kids and teens in on that so they'll know what's going on. Ask them for their input. Ask them how they're processing things. Ask them if they have any questions about the loss of the loved one and how we're going to be doing things very differently. Okay. And this last point is certainly not least, it is very important. I want you to monitor your grief. And what I mean by monitoring your grief is that, yes, there will be sadness. Yes, there will be loneliness and questions and confusion. Whatever those emotions are, those things are normal. But I want you to make sure that it does not start to look like depression. Okay, and what I mean by looking like depression is if you're noticing that you're not engaging in your life in other ways, right? So your sleep is different, your eating patterns have changed, your concentration is different. If you're starting to have dark thoughts about you wanting to harm yourself, okay, those are some signs that your grief is starting to be complicated and it's starting to lead towards a more clinical depression where you might need some professional assistance. Okay, you might notice that you're isolating a lot more. You're noticing that even outside of thinking about your loved one, that you're having a hard time experiencing any type of happiness with those things and people that you would normally enjoy. Okay, so if you experience some of those things in and of themselves, one change in your life does not mean a clinical depression. I want you to think about the totality of those things. So of those things that I listed off, if you've noticed like, oh, yeah, I think I have had lots of changes and it seems like my functioning is worse. Like maybe I'm not getting out of bed. Maybe I am not interested in keeping up with my hygiene. Those are some signs that are very different than what we would consider to be a usual course of grief. Okay. And if you're not sure, there's always space for you to reach out to your medical and mental health professional to get a professional opinion about how you're doing with your grief journey. Okay. So this is not meant to diagnose you if you notice that you have any of those symptoms. Okay, so I'm not diagnosing you. I want to be clear about that. But I'm just giving you some information so that way you can further explore this with your mental or medical provider. And this last piece of information that I want to share with you is how do we handle invitations? Okay, I thought this would be something that is very useful. I've gotten this question quite a bit in this season. How do I handle invitations? The first thing that I want you to do is what? Remember, check in with yourself. What do I need? What do I want? Okay. Once I check in with myself, I'm also going to ask myself, if I get an invitation, what will be expected of me? Okay. If I go to this gathering, am I expected to just come and enjoy? Am I expected to bring a meal? Am I expected to help clean up? Am I expected to decorate, go and do some of the shopping? Those are some factors that I'm going to keep in mind to determine if this is something that I want to attend. How long will the event last? Okay, making sure that I'm going to take my car, take an Uber so that I can leave when I'm ready. I also want to know what the atmosphere will be like. Maybe I am feeling pretty low. And I'm going to an environment where I know that it's going to be pretty loud and it's going to be fun. And I might need a little bit of a pick-me-up. I might go ahead and say, yeah, I'll come to that. But what if I'm feeling pretty low and I'm not in the mood for an active environment like that? But maybe I do want to be around people where it's pretty quiet and the conversation is pretty casual. Then yeah, that might be something that I want to do. So again, if you notice, the first thing that I've done is check in with myself, because that's going to help me to determine the kind of environment that I want to be in, what's expected of me, how long the event will last, if that's something that I really want to subject myself to. You also want to have a plan for unwanted conversations and questions. Sometimes people might want to have these very deep conversations in front of everybody, but what if you don't want to have that conversation right there? Or what if you don't want to have that conversation at all? So maybe have two or three responses that you already have planned to say. If somebody is bringing up something, you might say, you know what? I'm not sure just yet. I'm still processing, but thank you for asking. Or right now, I don't think that I've been able to start the grieving process because I'm still handling some of his affairs. Okay, so have a plan for those unwanted questions and conversations. And the last thing you can do is to give yourself permission to respectfully decline invitations. Now, I know that there's not a whole lot of invitations going on right now because they've asked us to limit the gathering, limit traveling and things like that. But people are still gathering in smaller spaces. So still give yourself permission to respectfully decline, even if it's a Zoom family meeting. Right? I know that the expectation is that you should have no excuse why you don't participate in a Zoom meeting, but even give yourself permission to decline a Zoom invitation or an online gathering of some sort. Okay. And if you do decide to go, whether it's virtually or in person, plan for a day or a period of rest afterwards. Okay. So I know that this has been a lot of information, but I know that this is information that will be helpful to you as we go into Thanksgiving, Christmas, and the New Year season. So I hope that these tips will be something that is encouraging to you, something that is empowering to you, and something that you can share with other people about what your grief process is like. Sometimes we don't have the words to articulate how we're truly feeling about things. And so hopefully what I have shared with you today can help you further make sense of what you have experienced. Let us now move into our prayer time. Dear God, thank you for our opportunity to gather today. Thank you for every listener who has enjoyed this podcast. I pray that you would allow us to continue to process our grief in a way that is healthy, in a way that brings us closer to understanding ourselves, brings us closer to finding acceptance and healing. I pray for every listener that you would give them an unspeakable sense of peace as they journey onward without their loved one. I pray a special prayer of comfort for those of us who have had multiple losses. I pray for family unity. I pray for harmony. I pray for peace. I pray for our country. I pray for unity in our country. I pray for love and compassion and understanding as we have all lost something during this pandemic. And most of all, I pray that we are able to return to a sense of rest, peace, and joy as we process through our grief journey. And it is in your Son Jesus' name that we pray. Amen. Well, that is all that I have for us today. If you are interested in getting a little bit more information about grief, I briefly cover it in my book, The Emotion Devotional, and I will make sure to link that in our show notes. And that is all that I have for today. I hope you all have a happy, happy Thanksgiving. Until next time, take care.